Not every day do I get to sit here and talk to a New York Times best-selling author, and he is also a fellow Medillion. This is pretty exciting to me. Many, many books. Get Capone, Luckiest Man, Opening Day, Birth of the Pill, another book coming out, The Language of Ali. Sitting next to me is Jonathan Eig, the, I don't know, what do we call you, author, sports writer, sports everything, societal discussion master. This is going to be really cool. I'm excited to have you here. This is Technori Live, and we've got you in studio, which is a rarity.
Thanks. It's good to see you again.
So, so we got a little bit of a backstory on how I met you. I think it's worth noting just for the budding journalists out there that one screw-up does not necessarily mean the end of your career, as long as you deal with it.
I don't even remember your screw-up anymore. I'm sure it was embarrassing, though.
Oh, it was embarrassing. So for the little backstory, so you were, I don't remember how you were writing about Tony Fitzpatrick, the artist.
Yeah.
And I think I Google image stole a picture that Tony had, you know, had done, a piece of art that Tony had done that you had a photograph of. And I slapped it on an interview that I was going to be doing with Tony. And we actually had a group. So this was at Medill Method. So we were doing teamwork. And so my job was basically artwork and to secure the interviews. I knew Tony. And the other guys were writing the pieces and we're supposed to interview them. And we published it. Next thing I know, I open up my email and there's an email like, hey, that's not belong to you. And it was you. And the funny thing is, like, I was like, oh, what the, you know, like, I don't know. I didn't even think about it. So I pull it down. I think I hope I wrote you a nice email saying, I apologize, you know, I'll pull it down or whatever. But then I found out who I was emailing back and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, like I said, I don't even remember. So.
And then, the funny thing is, I was embarrassed as can be. And then I found out literally like a week after that you were actually going to be a guest speaker, then talking about Chicago side at Medill. And
I was
like, this is just like, it's getting worse. He's getting closer and closer and closer. So,
yeah, but that's how you end up making connections, even through your mistakes. And that's part of being a journalist. You know, we write so much, we do so many stories, we do so many interviews. Everybody's going to make mistakes. The question is, do you make a good connection and learn from your mistake and maybe meet somebody who can.
I think, and that's happened now on my end. I've had, this is kind of a funny story. This just show's only about 9 months old or a little bit more than that. I mean, it's older than that. The original one is older than that. But in 9 months, we grew so quickly in the tech and innovation space that six other tech-centric podcasts have popped up in Chicago alone. And three of them actually stole the name of segments from my podcast. So we had, I won't say the names because the people will get upset, but I ended up reaching out to them being like, hey, you know, no problem. It's all good. Competition's good. Would you mind changing the name slightly as you just literally stole it from my segment title? Like that's what they're called.
Right.
And you know, I think how you handle that is a big deal because you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah. And you're going to continue to work in this world of this universe and you want to make sure you don't make enemies along the way.
Probably good advice. Well, enough about me and my stupid mistakes and learning experiences, but let's start talking about your career, which has been amazing. We kind of joked about it when you came in. You were on the Jon Stewart show. You're on ESPN. I saw you on Outside the Lines talking about Ali when Ali passed away and was like, oh, got to have Jonathan. I got on the show. So I ended up emailing you and here you are.
Thanks.
What is your, I guess, walk us through sort of your career. How did you get to becoming a best-selling author?
Well, I started out as a newspaper guy. I mean, I started working when I was 16 at my hometown paper. And then I went to Medill, graduated, went to work as a reporter in New Orleans at the Times-Picayune, and then the Dallas Morning News. And I was always a news reporter. I enjoyed writing features. I liked to write longer stories. I eventually did some magazine work. Then I got hired at the Wall Street Journal. I mean, and in the Chicago Bureau, not in New York. But while I was at the Wall Street Journal, I had an idea for a book. It was a biography of Lou Gehrig. So I did that in my spare time, nights and weekends, for about 4 years. And that was my first book, and it did really nicely. It made the bestseller list. It got nice reviews. They're working on a movie based on it now. So it's, you know, that was a huge thrill. And I didn't know if I'd be able to keep writing books, but because it's a very difficult way to make a living. I figured I'd just rather keep my newspaper job and maybe write an occasional book along the way, but. Everything changed so fast. The newspaper business is shriveling. The book business isn't doing that much better.
Yeah.
But I had the opportunity to keep writing books. I kept coming up with good ideas, and I kept getting advances. So far, so good. I've been away from – I haven't had a full-time job in 10 years now.
I'm slightly jealous.
I mean, it's a good life. I'm really lucky.
I was going to say, I have no real complaints. I mean, life is pretty sweet for me as well. But I cannot imagine – having the job that you have where you get to interview and talk to the closest people around some of the most iconic humans to ever walk this earth and learn backstories and things that no one would, you couldn't possibly know. It has to be like every day to be able to say that I found out this like little story from the brother or sister or friend or roommate of Jim Brown or of this guy or that guy. It's just like, what
it's a blast. Favorite? And especially right now with Ali, because he led just one of the most extraordinary lives of the 20th century. And I've been working for three and a half years now. I've done 350 interviews. I've interviewed all of his ex-wives. I've interviewed his family.
That probably took the first year.
Yeah, just to get them to talk to me took a year or more sometimes.
I'm sure.
I mean, his third wife, it took me 2.5 years to convince her to talk to me. And
how
a lot
do
of
you
people
do that
want to be,
just for a
paid.
How do you get someone to open up like that? Is it trust?
Yeah, you have to gain their trust. And sometimes that means, you know, if you're working as a newspaper reporter, you don't have that kind of luxury of time. Yeah. But if you're working on a book that's going to take you 3 or 4 years, you do. And you just have to go slowly and build up that relationship and show them that you're doing it right. I think that's the most important thing, is to show them your integrity, to show them that you really want their story, because the book won't be complete if they don't give an interview. And to let them see how hard you're working. And, you know, even Ali's current wife, you know, it took me, you know, more than a year before I began to get her cooperation. I'm not paying anybody for interviews. In the boxing world, it's all about money.
Payola. You know,
everybody wants to be greased, and I won't do it.
It's like the 1930s radio station world. If you want to get your stuff played on the air, it's a little payola up front here. We're not talking to you.
Yeah, and it's just me. You know, I don't have a support team. I don't have executive producers doing my work, doing my bidding for me. It's just little old me trying to get these interviews, trying to gather all the information, trying to do all the research, trying to sit down and write the thing. It's a crazy way to try to make a living, but it's so much fun.
Did you have a chance to meet Muhammad Ali under the pretense of this book?
Yeah, I did meet him once, briefly. The first time I went to his house, I spent 2 hours in his house, and he didn't come out of his room. I was heartbroken because I was really, as you can imagine, I'd spent all this time and energy researching him and getting to know his
whole
all the
world
around him. And I got into his home, and his wife welcomed me there, and then he just wasn't feeling up to an interview that day. But then I did finally meet him later that same year. It was last fall. He couldn't do an interview, but I was able to talk to him and tell him that I was working on this book. And I asked if I could come back and read him some of the chapters that I was writing. And he and his wife said they'd like that, but then he got sick and passed away before I could do that.
I am, to say that I am excited about this book coming out, it would be quite an understatement. I love Muhammad Ali. I'm a huge fan, not just the fighting part, but this is the piece of your career that I'm really excited to get into now is, sports has been a kind of a theme throughout some, not all of it, of course, but it is really, sports is just a mechanism for which the person became famous. It is a backdrop for the real discussion, the real societal discussion that you're writing about. And I think the way that you deliver this stuff, and it's, you talked about this when I saw you at Medill, about the, sort of the loss of the art of long form and the fact that people don't really have the patience for that. It's unfortunate because there are only a few people out there, that yourself included, that have the ability to draw you in with a topic that you would maybe always be obsessive. Sports, Muhammad Ali, iconic. Get Capone is another one where I'm obsessed with that whole, like, everything about mafia and everything about Capone and Chicago in the 20s and just lots of booze and prohibition. But it was just a subtext for the real story. And you get people in, and then they learn so much about what the society was like. It's like you embed them in it. This is through the eyes of the icon. It's almost like you spin the person around and the icon's telling you the story. And I think that is incredibly fascinating, and it's rare. And so when I had the opportunity to get you on here, I was super excited to talk about how did you learn to write like that? How did you find a voice? How did you find your voice?
I think you find it by practicing, by writing a lot, by starting at a daily newspaper and writing sometimes 5 or 6 stories a day, and copying other writers and seeing how their styles fit, if it feels comfortable, and then eventually you grow into your own style. I never wanted to be a sports writer because I didn't think it was serious enough. You know, I wanted to be in the news pages. But I had this epiphany, and this is really where I got into the book writing business. I was reading Seabiscuit when it first came out, and it just blew my mind because it was not a sports book. Yeah. It was a story about the Depression. It was a story about great characters, and you fell in love with these characters, and you learned about the Depression along the way. And that was a light bulb moment for me because I said, if other sports books were like this, they'd be so much better. All you get is baseball when you read a baseball book. All you get is football when you read a football book. And I don't care that much to, like, I'd rather have something meatier. I like to read and learn something deeper than that. And then I started thinking, how could I, you know, rip off that approach that Laura Hillenbrand took in Seabiscuit? How can I find a sports story that's about something bigger than sports? And immediately, Lou Gehrig just popped into my head, because it's a story about a man dying in his prime. It's a story about the strongest man in the game discovering that he's dying of a disease that melts your muscles.
Yeah.
And everybody can relate to that, because we all fear death, and we've all lost people we know before it was their time. And immediately I thought, that's the story. And the other thing is that if you want to make it as a writer, you've got to think of these things as a business. And this gets back to your question about sports. You've got to think about, is there a market for this book? Yes, I would love to write a biography of Miles Davis. I'm fascinated by Miles Davis, but there's not enough of a market for that book for me to support myself and pay at least something to contribute toward my family. My wife works too, so she carries the load sometimes. But I got to make a living if I'm going to do this. And sports books have passionate audiences. So if I can write smart sports books, or a book about the invention of the birth control pill, where I know there's a built-in passionate audience of women who are going to read that book, I have to factor that into my decision, because it is a little bit like launching a startup every 3 or 4 years. You got to factor in the question of whether anyone's going to buy it.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, look at it like a startup. I mean, I think there's very little difference. I mean, I look at myself in different views, right? I look at myself when I do this and the Technori events and stuff, like tonight is a media company, but it's really a startup. I mean, it's really it's an entrepreneurial journey. You still got to figure out a way to make money, still have to wait to find a market that wants what I'm selling.
Right.
And so to that degree, I mean, you're basically a startup that is getting an exit every time the New York Times bestseller list comes out. That's your exit, and then you got another one.
Soon as you finish, or even before you finish, you got to be thinking about what's the next one going to be. And you don't know if the one that you're working on is going to be a success. If it is, you might want to follow in that and do another one that's similar. If it bombs, then you got to start over and think about something totally different.
It's very fascinating. I cannot even imagine how. I mean, I guess I stopped myself thinking about this, because I think you have to not only be able to write at the level that you do about a topic that you're passionate enough about and to be able to pull out these stories and to work as hard as you are to get the story out. But then that has to coincide with something that an audience wants to hear about.
Yeah, the quality has to come first. If you don't have a good story, or if it's a story that people have heard a million times before, or if you're just going to try to paper over it and not really do the research and not do those 350 interviews, then you're going to be selling a false bill of goods.
I think that's where you said in the beginning of this interview, you said how really rare and difficult it is to make a living as a book writer. And I think that might be one of the main reasons that that's the case, because in order for you to have not just the talent and the fortitude and all of the other, you know, intangible things and tangible things required to do it, you have to have something to offer that an audience wants as well. And it's just a rare combination that a person has the vision to know what the audience wants and what they have never heard before, and the ability to bring it out of whatever the subject matter is, and then also just the ability to wake up every day and pound the nail into the ground until you get it.
Yeah, it's a tough business, and people are reading fewer books now, so your market is shrinking. And if you don't do it really well, it's going to be very easy for people to decide not to buy your book.
Well, you know what? That's a good segue for an even deeper conversation. People are not reading books as much, and I know, you know, websites and stuff, and I'm going to ask you these questions both for my audience as well as selfishly for myself, as we're pivoting with Technori and kind of turning this into offering up more digital content, producing more content for people. I know why, you know, people's patience are like instant now, and so just the idea of sitting down and reading a whole book, or the number of distractions and phones and things and whatever, all these, you know, drones landing in your house, like whatever, make it hard for people to sit down with the time and read a book. How are digital media companies, whether it's an author or whatever, how do you think they need to adjust in order to continue to offer a viable product?
It's really hard. And so many digital companies, including the, you know, the sports website that I started, have failed because there's just too much distraction. There are too many opportunities for eyeballs. You know, there's so many things you can read. You know, I don't even need to bring a book with me when I get on the bus because I've got my phone. There's so many options, and you've got to convince the reader that this is special. that this is something worth their time, and you've got to make them feel like they're getting something valuable in return. There's so much stuff that's free now to read that you can read free content for the rest of your life and never buy a book or a magazine again, and you could still be a pretty smart, well-read person.
Yeah.
So how do we convince them that it's worth spending $30 for a Muhammad Ali biography or spending $7 to buy the next copy of, you know, Elle magazine or whatever it is that, you know, we're trying to get people to commit to? I think the answer is quality. I think it's the only thing we have going for us. You're not going to trick them because you're tweeting brilliantly. That's not going
to,
you know, it doesn't convert to sales.
It'll lead to homepage hits, and then that's it.
Yeah, exactly. You can get people to look at your book, but to get them to click and buy, you have to really build a connection there. You have to prove that you are a reliable conveyor of and that you have something of quality to offer them. And even then, you know, you got to get them to buy the book. You still got to get them to sit down and actually read it and not just stick it on the shelf.
You know, and I think this is in, like, full disclosure with regard to Technori. I feel like the product that we're obviously the event itself, which is held, you know, tonight at Chase Auditorium, is something that is informative and educational. And I'm hoping to add a spin to that to make it a little bit more entertaining. The show that we're doing here hopefully is entertaining to some, but also informative. I'm trying to find that balance of I'm not going to be able to break stories ahead of, you know, the Tribune has got a whole group of people waiting outside the front door. So, but I also don't think people care about some of that stuff as much anymore because it's a ticker on every single TV is sort of your straight news. So how do you find that place where I'm able to tell unique stories? And I can't just be just a content pusher. Like, well, it's Monday, it's Tuesday, we have to have three pieces of content to go out today. That is insufficient. How do we get in, embed ourselves into some niche area and then tell a personal story?
I think the fact is that people still want stories.
Yep.
Podcast growth is explosive. People are making the time to listen to podcasts. They are making the time to read books. You know, how they get to those books, how they find them, how they choose them is changing. But people still want trusted storytellers. And I think the key, if you look at it, if you look at the podcasts that are really booming, if you look at the books that are selling, is that they're good.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, if they have a celebrity attached to them, that helps too.
Well, of course, a big name draws attention.
That's always going to work.
But at the end of the day, if you're not, I feel like, and there's different genres, of course, but I feel like if you're not some unique combination of entertaining and also informative, you're either just like a joke guy and then it's like, all right, that was fun for a minute. Or you're just like straight newsy. It's a little bit boring, snoozy. There's got to be a nice tie of something unique for me to feel like I'm both entertained as well as I left with, you know, value.
That's right. And I think for me in trying to pitch books, I try to do whatever I can. I don't have a TV show of my own.
Yeah.
I need to remind people that I'm out there. I need to let people know that I'm doing quality work, and that means associating myself with quality projects. And you know, I've been really fortunate that I've been in two of Ken Burns' documentaries. I'm working with him now on an Ali documentary. So you have to think beyond your niche. My niche is I'd like to be able to just write a book and know that people are going to flock to bookstores and buy it, but I have to think about how I build my own brand name and let people know that I'm out there even between books. That's hard.
Well, hey, if you ever want to write about tech, I'm happy to help you there.
Sounds good.
Anything I can do to help you, because it wouldn't help me at all to have Jonathan Eich attached to it. But no, in all seriousness, this has been pretty cool. I mean, one other little piece I think that I'm interested to see where it goes. I think everything is video now, right? I mean, if you can't see it, there's something, you know, missing from it. But then video itself has an inherent flaw that we're all mobile. So now I've got to see it in writing, and what we're doing is putting caption, you know, kind of a fancy way of captioning, graphic captioning on videos, but also writing sort of a, you know, 250, 300 word sort of piece on it. If you don't have multimedia, I don't even.
Yeah, it's so hard. And then you can make the argument that that's actually going to hurt me in the long run, because the more I feed people video, the less they're going to want to sit down and open that book and stare at a page that has nothing but 300 gray words on it.
But I think the interesting thing for you, I'm not sure if you were there, if I met the person, I'm forgetting, Rachel, I'm forgetting her name right now. But at any rate, she specializes in writing books that has multimedia in part of it. Have you ever thought of, instead of having sort of the picture pieces at the end of the book, that if we're doing digital books, that you could have sort of 30-second video components in the book?
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot.
Or is it too gimmicky?
You know, the problem is, it's taking the reader out of this universe that I'm working so hard to create.
Yeah.
I want them to feel like they're in my hands. They're in the hands of a really trusted storyteller, and that they can see these fights when I'm describing Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier in the ring. If they have the option to click and actually watch the fight,
if it doesn't line up with what they have in their vision, it's trouble.
And it's really exciting in a way. because I'm flipping over on my screen and watching that fight as a punch by punch as I'm describing it while I'm writing. But I don't want to. I can't run that risk of losing my reader that way, of having them break their concentration to stop and go watch a YouTube video. I just think that's dangerous. So it's really, you know, it's all still up in the air. But we're figuring it out as we go along. I think for some forms of storytelling, for some forms of books, it might work to include video. But for others, it's really risky.
This has been a very informative and amazing time sitting here listening to you talk about this stuff. Like I said, I look up to you a great deal. I think you're an awesome writer. I love the books you're doing. I cannot wait until The Language of Ali. Where can people go to, obviously, get your books everywhere? You've sold plenty of them. Where do people go to follow you on your thoughts and things and keep up watching you and see wherever you go?
You can go to my website, jonathanigg.com, and follow me on Twitter. I'm not that great. I'm so busy right now trying to finish the Ali book, but I do
so
my
you
best
write 600 pages, but you can't write 140 characters. Is that what we're getting at?
Exactly. It's much easier to go long.
Well, hey, you know, in the newsroom, you never had to write the head, right? You just write the title and the thing was
That's
come
right.
up with somebody
but I,
else.
But I always promise every time a new book comes out that I'm going to do a better job of connecting on social media. I'll try again.
I say that every week when I do this show. This time I'm going to actually make sure I post it out at the right time. Never gets done.
Right.
Thank you for taking the time and sitting
Thank
with
you.
Us. You can stream this episode and more at WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. Please stay connected by following us on Twitter @TechNori or follow me @Katun, KITUN. Boom. That's a wrap.